it is really fundamentally an American.
No more!
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 And whenever there's a problem anywhere in the village, the call would go out, no matter which part of the village it was in, and the call would be something like this. Okublio! And you would hear that call no matter where you were. And when you heard that call, you would drop everything. You would pick up your shield, you would pick up your spear, and you would immediately go to your post. And when you were at your post, and not just simply at your post, but when you were in a position to defend your post, you gave out a call that said, I am ready. And that call was, chief! So in response to the call, Okublio! When you were at your post, the answer would be,
chief!
Now, we just lost our village. We just lost our village. This is not a sing-along. Okublio! 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 I think we have this village defended.
Broadcasting from the gulag filling station of planet Earth, this is Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth about the drug war. My name is Dean Becker, our engineer is Steve Nolan, and tonight we listen to the sounds of breaking the chains.
The Breaking the Chains conference is over. I'm sitting here with Deborah Small, the coordinator of the event, and Deborah, how are you doing?
I'm good. I'm tired. I want to thank you for being here with us this weekend. I think that it was a great event in terms of the goals that we had set out to accomplish, and I feel really good about being here, being in Houston, and having had what was an amazing event and topped off by an incredible speech by Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee today.
And I agree, there were many, many fine speakers, many great sessions where much information was shared, and there's hundreds of people going back now with lots of new ammunition to help fight these drug warriors, thanks to your help.
Well, we were happy to be here. You know, I'm still basking in the glow of all the warmth from all of the people here from Texas. They've made us feel really welcome. They've really supported us. I feel that the goals that we had set out, which was to support local communities and local activists working to fight against the drug war, was accomplished. And I'm, again, incredibly grateful to all of the people here who supported us. Joy Sam Brown from Dallas, Texas and Mass. Tony Barber from San Antonio. Herbert Steptoe from here in Houston. The support that we got from Ada Ed. And most importantly, I have to thank Deloyd Parker at the SHAPE Community Center, because without him and his support and guidance, we would never have been able to pull this off. And finally, I want to acknowledge TSU, Texas Southern University, for being willing to allow an event like this on campus and to be part of what we were creating.
Also, while at the Breaking the Chains conference, I got the chance to visit with Frank Smith out of Kansas.
And I've worked for criminal justice reform, drug decriminalization. I've worked for prison abolition or something akin to that. And I've also worked in the field. I worked for many years in research, in drug and alcohol abuse research and criminal justice research. I worked as a counselor, as a therapist, running ex-offender programs. I've run substance abuse programs in prisons and on the streets. So I've got kind of a broad range of experience. And in the last 8 years, I've been increasingly focused on the problem of private prisons in the United States.
Now, I want to ask you a reason for that work and that look at the private prisons. What's going on in that industry?
Well, I became aware of it when I was working as a state employee in Alaska, and there was a move to send 300 prisoners to Arizona. These are people that are completely unacclimated. 40% of the Alaskan prison population are Native Americans, Aleuts, Athabascans, Tlingets, Eskimos, various Eskimos. And putting them in the middle of Arizona is a disaster. The other thing is moving them away from their homes, family support systems, churches, employers, prospective employers, things like that, is also a disaster. It's a prescription for recidivism. Two California Department of Corrections researchers found out that people that got visits from three or more people in the last year of their incarceration in a remote prison in California recidivated at only one-sixth the rate of people that got no visits. So it was clear to me that sending people to Florence, Arizona, out in the Arizona desert, was guaranteed to see that they did life on the installment plan. And I objected to that, and I started building a coalition of people in Alaska that understood that it was a threat to criminal justice policy, it was a disruption to the community, and it was a threat to labor rights, because these private prisons pay terrible, terrible wages with virtually no benefits, and they have tremendous turnover. So it's an awful labor situation, while at the same time the executives are making tens of millions of dollars. What the state was doing was, in attempting to resolve problems that should have been resolved with using alternatives to incarceration, for instance, or recodification of the criminal law, the state was putting itself in a position where it was going to have to pay for these people who are doing life on the installment plan at $30,000 a year or so. They're paying Correctional Corporation America in Arizona about $55 per day per prisoner right now. One of the things that most affects those people, all sorts of Native Americans, Native Hawaiians, is that they're completely disculturated. They wind up in a situation where their warders, typically white, almost entirely white, in poor rural areas, which is where these companies try to locate to reduce costs, have no understanding, no empathy with their culture. So it creates even more problems, because the resolution of these problems that they've had that have caused them to be sentenced to prison in the first place have been historically ameliorated and dealt with in their own native communities, in villages and reservations, through a very complex system involving respect for elders, talking circles, things like that. A native justice system which works quite well, and they've been totally taken away from that system that might give them some hope of, quotes, rehabilitation, unquotes, and they've been put into a system which guarantees a disculturation and an endless cycle of incarceration.
During the Breaking the Chains conference, Sammy Burroughs of Tulia, Texas, posed a question to the panel of legislators that were on stage, and later I got a chance to ask him to repeat the question for my listeners.
Well, I was just basically saying that since this country has a consumption problem and they have a supply problem, that there needs to be an international forum on these drug policies. It's not a United States problem. It's not a South American problem. It's a world problem. And these leaders need to focus on this drug war, because it's just as big a threat as some of the terrorists that's running around the country now. It's just as deadly. It's out of control. They're out of control. The whole situation is out of control.
Absolutely right. Now, as a Tulia resident, I want to ask you, are things getting better? Is it starting to change?
No, because it's still the same. We got people that's been released from jail, they're relieved, and we got people on the other side that put us in jail, they're frustrated because they still don't see that they've done anything wrong, because they're just like the rest of this country. They're living in a period of denial like everybody else. You know, everybody is wanting to deny that drugs are here, whether you're using them or you're selling them, or whether you're Bristol Myers, or whether you're some cartel down in South America. We have drugs, and they're here to stay. This part of American life, a world life. It's not going away into you. And as long as you've got people that are profiting from their ideas, whether they're racist, classism, whether they're Republicans, whether they're financial, members of the financial community, everybody in this situation is win, win, win on this drug war. They don't actually come out and say it, but the racists, this has been the best thing that ever happened to them since Reconstruction, advent of slavery. The people that want to divide the country between the poor and the haves and the have-nots, this has been the best tool that they've ever been able to use. You know, and the people that want to promote poverty. This has been the best tool that they ever had. The people that want to gain financial gain, this has been the best tool that they've ever had. It's been a win-win-win, and nobody is wanting to actually come out and say what the deal is. Everybody wants to run around and say, well, they're in denial. You take a guy and he'll go to the doctor, and the doctor asks him, how many cigarettes do you smoke? And he will not give a doctor the accurate account of how much smoking that he actually does because he's in denial. It's the same scenario with the drug war. Everybody's in denial about this deal. And we're going to still keep having the same thing until somebody stands up and say this stuff needs to be regulated from the seed in the ground until it's actually consumed. And it will never change because everybody is getting something out of it.
Reverend Alan Bean from Tulia, Texas.
It really is great. It's one of the few conferences where most of the people here have been directly impacted by the war on drugs. And it's good to see people from that background being able to figure out collectively what the hell is going on and what's happened to them.
Let's talk about some of those people in Tulia and what's happening to them now that they've been released.
Okay. Well, not everybody has stayed in Tulia. Generally speaking, the young black males who were released, and most of them fit that category, are having a very difficult time getting work. They still have those convictions on their records, even though they have been pardoned for them. It's sort of a way of saying, okay, you did it, but we're going to let you off, you know, because there are some questions here. That's as far as it's gone. Most people don't realize that the records of the Tulia defendants or ex-defendants have not been expunged. That stuff's still on their record, and when they go to apply for a job, they've got to say, I am an ex-felon. And we're working on changing that. The attorneys are working on it. The politicians are working on it. But that's still the fact right now. And in an economy that's strapped, like Tulia or most other small West Texas towns, there just isn't enough work to go around at the best of times. And when you've got that kind of an impediment working against you, you just don't get a job. So there's a lot of frustration. A lot of folks have had to leave town, go to places like Abilene, Dallas, Amarillo, that sort of thing.
I understand there was a recent bust in Plainview as well, pretty much like Tulia, was it?
No, it was a different kind of thing. They went into a predominantly or almost exclusively black neighborhood where people were just sort of hanging on the street. They got a U-Haul trailer, put a bunch of police officers inside the trailer, rode it down the middle of the street until they were close to the folks, and then all of a sudden, just like the Trojan horse, these officers bust out with their guns drawn. Little kids are forced to their knees, got little kids crying, and they searched everybody. They searched 35 people, I think. They found one guy with a joint, and that was about it. But it frightened the neighborhood. I mean, they felt like a community under siege.
It reminds me a bit of, we had a situation here at one of my 420 fests, and the police came. They had 8 undercover officers, first came in, gathered up a total of 1.3 grams of marijuana. They busted 8 people using 26 police officers, you know, 8 patrol cars, a paddy wagon. And this is during the war of terror, and yet they had the time to do all this. You know, it seems like a great waste of time, doesn't it?
Well, it certainly does. You wonder what the motivation is. Are we trying to get drugs off the street? Are we trying to arrest drug dealers? Or are we trying to intimidate communities of color and just keep everybody rocked back on their heels so they won't question what's going on? I think it's more likely to be the latter.
Well, I do as well. There's plenty of problems that need the attention of our elected officials, and yet they spend an inordinate amount of time on this drug war.
Well, that's right. And what people don't understand about Tulia, I mean, Tulia shows that in many cases, drug cases are fabricated, that we've got law enforcement people who often their backgrounds are not checked very carefully. The police almost want to know as little about some of these people as possible. Rogue cops who are making fake cases. But what if Tom Coleman had come to Tulia and gotten corroboration and had kept accurate records and had video or audio on all his sales? Would that have made it sensible drug policy, law enforcement policy? And the answer is no, because as soon as you arrest a drug dealer, whether the charges against that person are bogus or whether they're legitimate, somebody is going to be waiting in the wings to fill that person's shoes, simply for economic reasons. You cannot stop the flow of drugs just by arresting people. And it doesn't really matter, ultimately, whether the cases are fabricated or whether they're legitimate. The policy doesn't work. It certainly matters, of course, to the people who are arrested, whether they're guilty or innocent. But the whole drug war, whether you're arresting people who really are selling drugs or whether you're arresting people who aren't, is the same brand of insanity. It's not working.
Our friend Jack Cole from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, he has a saying that on the East Coast, they call it testifying. On the West Coast, they call it getting on the liar's bandwagon.
Well, I don't know what they called it in Tulia. One of the interesting things about Tom Coleman is that nobody really knew who he was, but they had the sheriff get up and call him a man of integrity and professionalism, bolster his testimony, so that the jurors would be impressed with this guy. And now that it has come out that almost every word Tom Coleman speaks is a lie, there's a lot of embarrassed people. But they're just saying, well, we picked the wrong guy. But it goes a lot deeper than that.
Okay, we'll be back in just a moment with some words from Liz Alanis, as well as Matty White from Tulia, Texas, and some words from the keynote speech by U.S. Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee.
This is Mark Greer, Executive Director of Drug Sense. You're listening to Cultural Baggage. To end the drug war, visit MAPINC.org. That's MAPINC.org. Get active, stay aware, stay informed, and let's bring an end to this nonsense.
For recognition of outstanding achievement in the field of drug reform, this week, Cultural Baggage is proud to announce our Hero of the Week, the coordinator of the Breaking the Chains Conference.
I'll continue to work with you and all of the other committed activists who are working to achieve justice in this state and throughout our nation.
Deborah Small, thank you so much.
For 8,000 years, marijuana has been known as a wonderful relaxant for bedtime. It's time to play Name That Drug by its side effects. Memory loss, falling asleep while driving, fainting spells, confusion, depression, slurred speech, agitation, hangovers, strange dreams, and hallucinations. Time's up. The answer, Ambien for sleep disorder. Another FDA-approved product. Okay, we're back. And next up, let's hear from those brave ladies from Tulia, Texas.
Speaking with Liz Alanis from Tulia, Texas. Liz, y'all have started an organization up there. Tell us a bit about it, please.
Okay, we started this organization approximately 4 months ago, and we got it started as a result of this whole drug ordeal that went on. Really, we're trying to educate and help out the children and the people and parents. Like it was mentioned a while ago, we want to advise them, and we don't want the same thing to repeat itself, the same story to repeat itself, like the situation we had in Tulia with all these people that were convicted, falsely convicted.
Now, at this conference, we've heard from the folks from Hearn, we've heard from the folks in Dallas that were stung by that sheetrock scandal, and we've heard from many others, not just from Texas, but from across America, that the story of Tulia, though it's the most blatant, perhaps, is not the only such story. Tell us what you've learned from some of these other folks.
Well, exactly that. We've learned that it not only is happening in Tulia, and it's happening in all the other areas and all the other towns here in Texas, and it's a rude awakening. It's a rude awakening. We need to wake up, and we need to really educate ourselves on our civil rights, and we need to let the people know that it's going on. And in Tulia, to this day, you can feel the tension, you know, it's still going on.
All right, here we have Matty White again.
We have a lot of members, too. We have some of them here, Ophelia Brown, Ida Smith, and Betty Parker, and some of my kids, and Kareem White and Donnie White, and Reverendville and Sisterville that's, you know, in this committee with us. And, you know, we're trying to educate everybody, you know, that we know in Tulia, because we know it's going to always be drugs. It was drugs back then, and when we die, it's still going to be drugs. But, you know, something's got to stop. You know, it's got to be a breaking point, you know. And all this time that they're giving for drug offense, when people are murdering people and getting probation in a few years, you know, that's not right. And everybody can see this.
Basically, in our town, it's really, I can speak personally, I grew up in Tulia. Basically, it's always been like, it's who you are. In other words, like Maddie was saying, you know, if a person goes and murders somebody, it's who you are. You might get a 4 or 5 year sentence or a 7 year sentence, and you know, and basically, if you're of color, like you know, you might get 35 and 25 years. I mean, nothing gets passed by us. I mean, in our community, so we're trying to make a change and also educate, and that's why we started this organization that will probably help the whole community and the communities around.
I think we have this village defended.
The village, the state, and the nation is under attack by drug warriors. It is time to pick up your shield and your spear and to take action to end the insanity of this drug war. If you were unable to attend the Breaking the Chains conference, I advise you to please tune to kpft.org. There you can listen in to many of the sessions and learn more about what you can do to end this insanity. Okay, next up, let's hear from the U.S. Congresswoman, the pride of Houston, Miss Sheila Jackson Lee.
We said that Sheila don't have to run between elections, but she runs, she operates like she's running for office every day. I present to you our champion in Houston, Texas, our defender of our rights, Miss Sheila Jackson Lee. Give a great big hand. Will you do that for me? Why don't you? She is a wonderful woman. Come on, Sheila. Amen.
Wow, I'm gonna be moving from place to place. Reverend Jefferson, we stand on your shoulders. It is powerful to have a minister that knows where it's at, is it not? That understands about housing, that understands about substance abuse or use or drug policies, that's prepared to be on the front lines. Would you give Reverend Jefferson a very, very strong applause? The Cullen Missionary Baptist Church, his leader, the visionary. Thank you so very much. And I know that State Representative Harold Dutton, because it's not only in his heart, his soul, but in his intellect, he has been the leader on criminal justice issues in the state of Texas since he got elected. And there were many who thought that they could pull him down because he talked about these issues that most people were not comfortable with. But yet he persisted, and he has done some very fine work on the idea of good time and the release of prisoners and rehabilitation. And give him, State Representative Harold Dutton, and the restoration of rights. Once you have done the time, restoration of rights. Thank you very much, Harold. We appreciate it. As I said, I'm going to move from place to place. You know, Deborah said, all things work together for good. All things work together in the Lord's name. All things work together in time. However, I know my people who have been shackled want to be unshackled, and so their time is precious. I respect that. And when I say my people, let me say that I'm talking about all of us who walk the same walk along the narrow road sometimes that is rocky, no matter what our race or creed or color, and whatever our place is, that we are struggling to raise this issue, dealing with those who wish to break the chain of lack of understanding, break the chain of discrimination, break the chain of disparate treatment, break the chain of intense incarceration, break the chain of keeping us from our families and not allowing us to reach our higher and most important place.
Okay, we've just got a couple of minutes left, and with part of that time, I want to have some additional words from Tulia, from the Reverend Alan Bean.
You were just a few months ago placed in a position here in the drug policy forum of Texas as the new president. For those out there who may want to get involved in this effort, what could they do to assist, you know, in changing some of these laws, changing the perspective?
I think the first thing you need to do is educate yourself and try to figure out what is really going on. I spent most of my professional career as a Baptist minister, and I must confess that when it comes to the war on drugs, although I was sympathetic to the victims, although I was aware that a disproportionate number of African-American and Latino men and women were going to prison and that the war on drugs was not being prosecuted fairly, I didn't realize the complete bankruptcy of the entire enterprise. I had to educate myself, and I learned most of what I know about the war on drugs from people like the Drug Policy Forum of Texas. And so that's the first thing we have to do. The second thing, I think, is to frame some kind of a strategy. When you're living in the belly of the beast, one of the most conservative states, perhaps the most conservative state, especially when it comes to drug policy in the nation, it's difficult not to know where to start. Because if you get up and say, hey, folks, you know, we need to end the prohibition of drugs tomorrow, we need to legalize and regulate drugs like marijuana and heroin and cocaine, everybody's going to look at you as if you're crazy. Even if you could convince them that you were right, they wouldn't support you. The politicians and the policymakers wouldn't, because the repercussions for them professionally and personally would be unacceptable. So we've got to move incrementally while we educate in a much more thorough way. We've got to get behind policy changes and political changes that are small and take a step-by-step approach while at the same time trying to give people a feel for the big picture. And that's a difficult balance to maintain. But if we try to go for the whole enchilada right off the bat, we're going to fail. And so I think we need to get behind groups like the ACLU in Austin, who are really trying to come up with workable solutions that they can sell to the Republican majority. But at the same time, I think we also have to make it very clear to people where we're coming from and where we want to go ultimately. So we can't just tailor our message for the politicians. We've got to learn how to speak one language when we're talking to them, because politics is the art of the possible. But we also have to educate people. And I think one of the things that's really come out of this conference, a lot of people have been saying, we've been preaching to the choir, we've been talking to one another, and we've got one another all convinced now that we're right. We need to start talking to people with money, people with influence, people with political clout, and try to convince them. Try to find that courageous minority who are willing to take a stand on unpopular issues because they are convinced in their souls that it's the right thing to do.
For those out there on the Drug Truth Network in other cities listening to this program, I want you to remember that I'm willing to work with you if you can find elected officials in your state or metropolitan area willing to debate the drug war. Please let me know. I'll make arrangements to produce a show focusing on your city as well. In Houston, for our Project Houstedam, we're no longer just focusing on the marijuana issue. We're also focusing on the fact that thousands of people here have been sent to prison on evidence that is not credible. In much the same way Tom Coleman's evidence was deemed to be not credible and the people of Tulia were set free, so too must we set the people railroaded by the Houston Crime Lab free. And as always, because of drug prohibition, I must remind you, you don't know what's in that bag. Please, be careful. For the Drug Truth Network, and on behalf of my technical producer, Steve Nolan, this is Dean Becker for Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth. This show is produced at the Pacifica Studios of KPFT, Houston.